The Bible reading this morning is from Matthew, the 16th chapter, starting with the 13th verse through the 20th. When Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And they said, "Some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and other Jeremias, or one of the prophets." And he said unto them, But whom say ye that I am?" And Simon Peter answered and said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered and said unto him, "Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say also unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven. And whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven." Then charged he his disciples that they should tell no man that he was Jesus the Christ.
Good morning.
It's good to see everybody out this morning.
So as we promised last week, this lesson will bring our series that I've been doing in this early service on rocks and stones to an end. And this may surprise you, but we have not really looked at every use of these two words that occur in the scripture. What I've tried to do is look at all the major categories of their usage. And so we haven't really exhausted the subject. We probably have exhausted the listeners with the tediousness of this study. And so this morning's lesson is another one of those where we're going to be jumping from things to items to items, because all we're looking at this morning to bring this lesson to a close is how Jesus used these words, rocks and stones, or how they're used in reference to Jesus in the New Testament. And so one of the things that's quite obvious about that is there is multiple references that are literal in nature, where rocks and stones are mentioned, and what is meant by that, whatever the role they're playing in the story, is that they are just rocks and stones. They start occurring very early in the gospel, in the account of the temptation of Jesus. There are two different references. And you remember that Jesus was in the wilderness for 40 days and he fasted. And at the end of that 40 days, Satan tempted him. And the first temptation that Satan did was to tempt him to turn the stones into bread. Luke chapter 4 and verse 3, "And the devil said to him, if you are the sons of God, tell this stone to become bread." And so they're in the wilderness. The wilderness, or the desert of Palestine, where the Jews lived, was a rocky desert, not a sandy desert. And so rocks would have been in abundance. And so it's just really simple that Satan points to a rock and says, "You're hungry. If you got the powers you're supposed to have, turn that into bread and eat." And we know that Jesus answered him and did not fall into that temptation. The second one, well, I'm trying to move too quick here. The second one was in that same episode in Matthew 4 and verse 6. Basically, Satan takes Jesus up to the pinnacle of the temple. And he quotes from Psalm 91. It says, if you're the Son of God, throw yourself down. And quotes from Psalm 91, where it says, "He will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, and you will not strike your foot against the stone." And so he says, the psalmist says, if you're the Messiah, the angels will protect you and keep you from hurting yourself. So prove that you're the Messiah, that you're the Son of God. Throw yourself off the temple so that the angels will keep you from dashing yourself against the stones at the bottom. And so in both of those cases, his reference is quite literally to a rock or a stone, as would fit the environment in which the story was told. And then another very familiar one is when the scribes and the Pharisees brought the woman taken in adultery to him in John chapter 8. And they said, "We've caught her in the very act of adultery, and the law of Moses says she should be stoned. What do you say?" And you remember that story, that he basically stooped down and started writing in the dirt. We don't know what he wrote. But he says to them, "He who is without sin among you, let him be the first to throw a stone at her." And so we discussed that very early in this series when we were talking about all the various uses of rocks and stones. And one of the categories they looked at was that the stones were used as an implement of punishment or execution. And so quite literally, that's what these people who brought this woman to him were trying to do, trying to get him to advocate that she be stoned to death. And so that's obviously a reference to those literal stones that the Jews would use to put someone to death. Now, there are actually two different occasions in the Gospels where Jesus makes reference to the building blocks, the stones of which the great temple was constructed. One of those was on the occasion of what we normally call his triumphal entry. In Luke 19, verses 41 through 44, it says, "When he approached Jerusalem, he saw the city and wept over it and saying, if you had known this day, even you, the things which make for peace, but now they have been hidden from your eyes. For days will come when your enemies will throw up a barricade against you and surround you and hem you on every side. And they will level you to the ground and your children within you. And they will not leave in you one stone upon another, because you did not recognize the time of your visitation." And so he was being rejected by the leaders, and he makes this prediction concerning the ultimate destruction of Jerusalem, and says actually of the entire city that they are going to tear it down stone by stone. The one we're probably more familiar with the same use of the words, is in three of the Gospels. It's in Matthew chapter 24, and we're going to read from Matthew in just a minute. It's also in Mark 13 and Luke 21. And that's when Jesus is with his disciples. And in Matthew chapter 24 and verse 1, it says, "Jesus came out from the temple and was going away when his disciples came up to him to point out the temple buildings to him. And he said to them, 'Do you not see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here will be left upon another, which will not be torn down.'" And so the same type of reference, the one to his disciples is specific of the temple itself, and the one to his enemies was of the entire city. And of course, we know that in AD 70, when the armies of Rome destroyed the city of Jerusalem, that the temple was totally destroyed, and the walls of Jerusalem were pretty much destroyed. I know that there is the section in Jerusalem, if you go there now, that you see called the Wailing Wall. They say that's the only standing part of the walls of Jerusalem. But that was an interior wall, not the protective walls around the city. Rome totally destroyed the walls around the city and totally leveled the temple in 70 AD. But the reference by Jesus there is simply to those building stones. And they were quite huge. A number of years ago at the Museum Center in Cincinnati, they had an exhibit of those stones, those walls in the museum down there that was touring the country. And Debbie and I went, and you're talking about stones that if you stood on the flat on your feet, and I reached up, and of course I'm not a very big man, Chris could have probably reached to the top of them. I couldn't reach to the top of the stones. That's how big they were. And they only had a handful of them that had been brought from the temple excavation site. But it was a demonstration of the size of these stones and how big they were. And then the last literal one, of course, is in reference to his tomb and his burial after he is crucified. In Matthew 27:60, Mark 15:46, Luke 23:53, those three passages tell us that it was a new tomb carved into the rock. And so his tomb was not a natural cave, as was often used by the Jews, but some rich person, Joseph of Arimathea, perhaps had paid to have this tomb carved into the rock. And then in Matthew 27 and verse 51, what we are all familiar with about that is the tomb was covered with a large stone. Those are the verses that I referenced there. And you've probably seen pictures of tombs like that. Nobody can really prove which one was the tomb of Jesus, although if you spent your good money to go to Jerusalem, the tour guide would take you directly to the one that he would say was the tomb of Jesus. But there's lots of them like that over there with the large stone. And then Matthew 27 and verse 51 tells us at the exact time that Jesus died upon the cross that the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook and the rocks were split. So there was seismic activity that was noticeable that corresponded to the exact time that Jesus died, and the literal rocks were literally split into pieces at that time. So those are all the literal usages of the terms rocks and stones in reference to Jesus. But now, of course, there is a number of ways in which Jesus uses these words in a figurative way. And the first of those is what I had Jim read for us this morning, that rather lengthy reading in Matthew 16, verses 13 to 20, where Jesus has asked his disciples, "Who do men say that I am?" And they give some of those answers that people are saying, and then he says, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And so at that point, Jesus changes Peter's name from Simon to, in Aramaic, Cephas, in Greek, Petros, and emphasizing that Peter, and actually Peter stands for all men in this regard, are but a stone. He uses the Greek word that is for a stone, the kind of stone you could pick up and throw in someone. But when he talks about the confession that he is the Christ, the Son of the living God, he uses a different word that means a rock, a foundation ledge. He says that's the foundation upon the church will be built, is that I am the Christ, the Son of the living God. And you've heard these discussions probably before in various settings.
It's often involving our Catholic friends because the Catholic Church takes this and uses it in the exact opposite way that Jesus does. They ignore the difference in the two words, Petra and Petros, and basically say that Jesus is saying that Peter is the foundation of the church. But when you understand the words, you understand that couldn't be so, because the word that he uses to name Peter symbolizes a stone you could pick up and throw versus the foundation. And so the foundation is not a man, whether it's Peter or any other man. The foundation is Jesus. He is the rock that God has promised in the Old Testament prophecies about which upon which the church would be built. Well, a second one in which he uses it in a symbolic way to teach a spiritual lesson is in the parable of the soils. In Luke 8, in verse 6, he says, "Other seed fell on the rocky soil, and as soon as it grew up, it withered away because it had no moisture." Jesus, in telling the parable, was using something that people would understand. And sometimes we think this a little bit odd, that the land of Canaan was described to the children of Israel when it was promised to the fathers as a land of milk and honey. And so often we see pictures of the geography now, and it's a very rocky, barren land. But it was also a very fertile land, particularly the Jordan Valley and the grasslands and things like that. And so in doing this parable, Jesus was using things that they would be very familiar with, because they could not walk very far in their land without passing very fertile ground. And if they walk a little bit further, they might be walking through the fertile ground on a road surrounded by the craggy rocks. That's just the topography of their land. It's not like, you know, we went out to see Utah, where our friends are from there, and Dowdies, and lots of rocks, but also a lot of desert. That wasn't the way the land of Palestine was. The rocks were there, but in the areas between those was rich grassland. And the Jordan River, even though, you know, typically, I think if you look on a map, you'll see that they're at about the same latitude that we are. But the Jordan River, they grow citrus in the valley of the Jordan River because of the depression of it. It's semi-tropical, even though it's really at about the same latitude as Ohio. And so as Jesus told that story, he was telling them things that they have all walked through the rocky ground. They've all walked through the very verdant fields. And so he just uses that as to say, here's that spiritual lesson. Those on the rocky soil are those, when they hear, receive the word with joy, and they have no firm root. They believe for a while, and in the time of temptation fall away. So they had walked through those places and seen those little plants seemingly growing right out of the rock, and knew what would happen when the hot sun scorched them. So Jesus made use of that to teach that great spiritual lesson. And then the last one is that I want to look at is when he rebuked the Pharisees. We're back in Luke 19 at the time of the triumphal entry again. And this time he uses it in a very symbolic way. When we looked at the first passage about not one stone would be left upon another, he was talking about the literal building stones that they had used and they would understand. But Jesus is entering the temple, into the city of Jerusalem, in what we call the triumphal entry, and his disciples are praising him. They're saying, Hosanna to the highest. They're giving him glory that belongs in the mind of the Pharisees and the chief priests, that should only be spoken of God. And so Luke 19 and verse 38 says, they say, blessed the King who comes in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven and glory in the highest. You're the one God promised us, is what they are saying. And the Pharisees say to him, you need to tell your followers to stop praising, saying these things about you. And so Jesus' response to them is simply in verse 40. He says, I tell you, if these become silent, if the people stop praising me, the stones will cry out. So what he's basically telling them is, the praise is deserved. I am the one the psalmist was talking about, and I will be praised. And so if the people don't praise me, even these inanimate objects will. Now, literally, he wasn't saying a miracle was going to occur. He was just using a figure speech that says, this is how absurd what you're asking me is. The praise will not stop, and if you could stop them, it would come even from these rocks, because I am the one that God has promised. And so those are all the ones that I found. And like I said, I had 40-some pages of rocks and stones of verses that had them. And I think I counted I didn't try to cover them all, but I had about 15 that I couldn't categorize, and so I didn't even bother to try to include them. But that pretty well finishes that subject. Okay, I think Brother Rose has the prayer, and then we'll go to our Bible classes.